accession number 18493, reel 2.
Mr. Arnold Lupton, reel 2. We were talking about the perhaps the Mosley marches and the brown shirts and so on.
Well, I had some of the friends who I played rugby with still, the school's old boy team. Some of them lived in various parts of London, and in where they lived, some of them got a fair bit of it going on around them, of this fascist and communist battles and all this kind of thing going on. Most of them eventually joined the services too in different outfits. But I don't think that necessarily that would have affected them. In doing so, it just happened.
You volunteered, although it was fairly clear that something was brewing internationally, you volunteered. What was the reaction of your family to that?
Well, they said that they thought it was quite fine, but whether they did or not, I don't know. I can't say just what they felt. And my two brothers, of course, were very much younger. They were still at school. But my mother and father, I think they quite approved in a way. They thought it was a bit of a come down from the bank, but they thought if I had got an opportunity to go on to commission, okay, it'd be all right to do it that way. Because that, again, to get a commission in those days was fairly expensive, to go up to Sandhurst and all that kind of thing.
What about your brothers? I mean, were they at boarding school or were they at day school?
No, they were always at day school. Maybe it cost enough to send me to a boarding school. I don't know, but they never went to any boarding school. They were local Wellington County School or something, and did very well, but I don't know why I was always at boarding school. Just happened.
How about your friends? What about your colleagues at the bank? How did they take your joining up?
Well, they thought it was a bit odd. Anybody wanting to give up banking, I mean, speak to some blokes now who belong to my Provost Club and so on, who were bankers. Just can't imagine anybody wanting to give it up and go into the services. But, I think they just thought it was queer, but yes, it could happen. They might do before long sort of thing because of the general air around them.
And how about your non-working colleagues? I mean, the ones you were still playing rugby with. Did they consider that equally odd, or did they have a different view?
Well, I think they possibly had a different view in that some of them may have belonged to the RAF volunteer or the Navy something or other and so on, or the Army. Perhaps territorial army. I think everybody felt that it was going to come anyway, whether they did it now or they did it a bit later on.
Going on now to what happened to you after you'd taken the shilling, could you just explain what the sequence of events was?
Well, as far as I can remember it now, I think that it was either a day or 2 days after that I had to be at, Waterloo Station, to to take a train down to, I was given a voucher, you know, to present to the railway. At a certain time, take a train down to, I think it was Wareham, was the nearest place in Dorset, where we would be collected by trucks to take us to Bovington. But I think we did have just for a couple of days, as far as I remember it, to get ready.
This was between actually signing up in the recruiting office?
Yes. Yes.
What sort of medical was there involved in?
Well, I had had a medical examination in the recruiting office where they passed me as A1, and no question of any varicose vein or anything, and that was it. That there's the usual medical officer style examination which they gave you every so often in the army. I didn't know it at the time, but that was to be it. And it just, okay, he's A1, he's put down on the sheet, and there you are. And as I say, there had been a brief, very simple exam as to what you could read and write, and that was it. You were in the army. As he used to say later on, as long as it breathes, it's in.
So, down to Wareham, into trucks, and then up to
Bovington.
What was your first impression of Bovington?
A lot of wooden huts, big areas to people to march around on, tarmac, and sports fields and so on around about. They were, well, I suppose they did sort of invite you in, but not they weren't the most welcoming hosts, like just some more they'd got who had to be trained, that was it. And
what was your reception? Were you being shouted at or just treated?
Oh, you were you were treated reasonably for those days. You and there, and you there, and that sort of thing. Go to the quartermaster's office and get yourself equipped with uniform, boots, and all the rest of it. And then report to the cookhouse and get yourself a cup of tea and so on. That was it, really.
What kit did you bring with you from Civvy Street?
Well, only washing, you know, toothbrush and toothpaste, shaving kit. One or two changes of underwear, I think. An odd shirt, perhaps. Socks. Mind you, you were getting all those anyway in the army. Not necessarily good fitting, but at least you got most of those provided. So next time you got home, which was quite a long while after, you could unload your civvy kit back at home.
What were you told to bring with you? Or was that just what you chose to bring?
No, you were more or less told to bring just a change of underwear, shirt, socks, and your shaving and tooth cleaning stuff. That was really it. Yes.
What about your fellow recruits, and what was your first impression of them?
Rather uncouth lot from all round the place, but they were very friendly. I mean, we had people from Bristol, from Liverpool, from Macclesfield, from Devon. They were all over the place going in. It's not like a Not like, say, the Cheshire Regiment, where everybody was a Cheshire man or something and went in, from choice anyway. We were a collection from everywhere around Britain. Although this, eventually, the unit I went into was basically a sort of London unit. But we weren't all Southerners who went there. We just got collected from all over the place.
What was the general feeling? Was there a sort of trepidation? What have I let myself in for? Or
there could be that, yes. But in a lot of cases, they hadn't got jobs anyway, so they were really, what they were getting was a job. Make the most of it. And that was, work was very difficult in those days. So many businesses, well, in sad straits. I mean, even the big businesses like railways and coal mining and all those kind of things, they were all in a very bad state generally, and a lot of people from the towns where these businesses were centred were very glad to get any kind of a job, and they'd put up with it, apparently.
From that, did you get the impression that that is why some or all of them had volunteered?
I would say that most of them had volunteered because of difficulties in getting or keeping working. I would say the majority of them were in that field.
Perhaps then, not wishing to put words into your mouth, but how strong was this feeling that we ought to be joining up to be ready for a war?
Oh, that, I think, was a minor consideration at the time in most of the people who were joining up. And it was a few months before they started national service and started calling people up. So those who joined were really, the majority were joining for a job, to occupy themselves and get paid for it. Even though you weren't getting paid millionaires cash, you were still getting paid.
Talking of which, what was your first army pay? Can you remember?
I just can't remember. I would think, whilst I had got to King's Shilling when I first joined, I think it was more than the shilling a day at the time, something perhaps about 1/6 anyway. It probably was about 10, 12 shillings perhaps I got in the first week. I don't remember exactly. An awful long time ago.
Anyway, you arrived and you were told to get kitted out, the famous kitting out at the QM stores.
Yes.
What was that like? Because you hear all sorts of stories about how that's done. Can you remember how you...
Well, you would stand there in front of the counter, and the... not the quartermaster himself, that was not his sort of job. One of his assistants, corporal or something, would say, oh yes, you're about so and so, and you know, in size. Yes, this, take this, and also for trousers, you know, and boots, what size? Oh, 11. Yes, well, didn't matter. It was 11s or 12s or something you got. I had some 13s once, which, and I only take 10s actually. But anyway, you got kitted out, and some socks, yes, well, these will do because they'd stretch. I didn't tell you that when they were washed, they shrunk. Because they were just natural wool, I think, that hadn't been treated in any way. And some underpants and thick shirts and that sort of thing. Oh, of course, and in those days you used to have button-up collars, didn't have open neck collars, because you didn't have any ties to wear. You only got those when you eventually got out of the training depot and got yourself a number one dress or something. Then you might, if you were lucky, get one with an open collar. Otherwise, even that would be a button-up collar too.
Is this your battle dress?
Battle dress. No, it wasn't battle dress at that time. It was a jacket with patch pockets on. All brass buttons, which had to be well polished. And your belt to go round it, which had to be well whitened, and the buckle, brass buckle polished and all that. Your boots, well, you were given a few weeks to be able to see your face in them, with polishing and polishing and boning, as they called it, which was rubbing it around with your toothbrush handle to make it nice and smooth. Yes, it seemed a long time ago. It was a very different kind of outfit then. Oh, and we had a peaked cap as well, with a badge, which of course had to be all polished. And any spare time which you had was spent in polishing something or other.
How good a fit was the kit by and large? I mean,
on the whole, it was quite a good fit. There were many times later on, which was probably due to shortage of choice of sizes, when things didn't fit so well. But that first lot, it fitted pretty well. Even sleeves and things like that, they all seemed to belong to you, more or less. Or you belong to them, I don't know which. Anyway, it was quite... Yes, I didn't feel disgraced when you walked out in such equipment. Not that you could walk out anywhere from Bovington. Nowhere to walk out.
You say every spare moment you had to polish or clean or anything like that. Mm. Were you given specific instructions in how to do it, or is it something you had to learn as you went?
You more or less had to learn it as you went. You did eventually get the odd word from some people who'd been in a few months, perhaps, and taught you how to get the real shine on your boots, or get a nice white on your belt, and so on. But mainly it was a question of just learning to do it yourself, especially as... I mean, in the daytime, you were occupied in drills, in PT, which is now PE, and runs, marches, didn't matter what, plus, yes, learning how to do things their way. I mean, the question of, because you were in a Royal Armoured Corps unit, you were going to deal with machines and so on, didn't come into it for many months. That was much later on. You had to learn how to be browbeaten, as you might say, into the military way of doing things. And plus sports, you got a fair bit of sports, swimming, cricket, rugby in the season. And of course plenty of field sports, running and jumping and that kind of thing. Those who could do it or had the slightest inclination to do it, boxing too, they were all there. And but by the time you'd finished a day of this, from I forget, maybe 6 o'clock in the morning when the reveille went, until the time that you had finished all your polishing up for the next day's do's, whatever they were, you just crawled into bed then and died. Too glad to do so.
So what was a typical day? Reveille, what was the first thing that happened after Reveille?
Well, you would probably have to go out on parade, first of all, to see you were all there. And, of course, properly dressed. Then you would have to make sure that everything in the hut where you'd been sleeping was tidy, your bed was made exactly as it should be, blankets folded and biscuits, which were the things you slept on, stacked up properly, all your other bits and pieces, and your washing and shaving kit and spare boots if you had any or something like that. Everything had to be just exact. And the sergeant came around and made sure that it was. If it wasn't, you were on jankers or something and have to go and peel spuds all day. Well, when you had any spare time. Then you would go out on, don't know, it may be to the gym to take part in all the necessary exercises and what have you there until you were just about fit to drop. And then you would go on, let's see, with a bit of luck, it might be nearly lunchtime by then, and so you would go along with your bits of mess kit and collect whatever the food was. Oh, I mean, there was breakfast, of course, earlier. I'd forgotten that. Then the, yes, breakfast was before you tidied up all your beds and everything, so that you could have your breakfast kit and all that on there too, in the correct shape and position. Lunch, yes, well, you got that. It was quite good food. Well, let's say it was nothing to complain about anyway, and the cooks had a reasonable idea of cooking. Nothing sort of Savoy Hotelish or anything like that. And then after that, you would be expected out on the sports field, probably, to go and do whatever was going on. I had a curious thing once. I was playing for the, well, I was about to play for the depot team cricket. I was 12th man, actually, but anyway, we were playing Cambridge University, and they came along with a man short. So I played for Cambridge University. I can always put that down. And I even kept them in for a few runs, too. But, yes, we had sports and various other things. And then you got an evening meal and polished up everything that needed polishing ready for the morning. And as I say, then you sank into bed and were only too glad to get there.
How meticulous were these hut inspections? Were they quite fierce?
Oh, yes. Even the ordinary sergeant's inspection, which was every day, really. Oh, and by the way, you also had to polish the floors with, what do they call the things now? But it was a polishing head stuck on a dirty great piece of wood on the end of a pole, and you had to put the polish on this thing and then keep doing all the wood floor, and that also took place in the morning before he came round to inspect your beds and so on. That was part of his inspection. Well, that was quite a job. Because whilst you did it around your own bed, down the centre of the hut was a sort of general place, and you each had to do a bit of it, because shoving this thing up and down, it was a pretty hefty piece of stuff to keep moving around. But anyway, yes, they were pretty severe in their inspections. If you didn't get it right, well, you had to get it right within a few minutes again for him to see it in its proper state. Then, of course, if it was the sergeant major or one of the officers, duty officer coming around, it was even more, had to be perfect. If you could get perfect, even more perfect. And that was it. Yes, it was strict, but they weren't beating you or anything. It was just strict and plenty of shouting going on with it.
Do you get the impression they were sort of deliberately picking and finding fault, or was it really fair?
It was fair. What they needed to do, of course, although you didn't think so at the time, was to make you do what you had to do by order. In other words, you became a number. You were a number, and you became a number, part of a machine. But of course, you didn't think that at the time. You just thought, "What the hell have I come here for?"
if an individual got their kit laid out wrongly, was any punishment visited only on the individual or on the hut?
No, so long as the general appearance of the hut was okay, it was only on the individual, and he had to do some extra, whatever it was, work of some kind. And we had one man, I don't know what happened to him eventually, lost track of him. I think he came from around Bath somewhere, and he was somebody who could not march the way any other person marched. That is, his left hand always went where his left leg did, and right hand where his right leg did, which is not what people normally do when they're walking. And he was always getting into trouble one way or the other, but I just can't remember what happened to him eventually. I think he was still down at Bovington when we left it, trying to teach him how to march. But
was this a sort of back squadding, I think is what is the technical phrase, isn't it? Where perhaps you don't pass out or something. Was this something you were aware of?
Yes, they had a big do at the end of your training, passing out parade. And you were on this big square, and you would drilled to the absolute maximum precision to do everything to the second, to the fraction of a second, in relation to each other and in relation to the sergeant who may have been in charge of the squad. No band or anything, that only came on very special occasions, but you had to do this and all your eyes right and all this kind of thing as you were marching past the they wouldn't have the CO on there, they'd just have the duty officer, whoever it was, and if you did everything absolutely correctly, then okay, you passed out. But if you had somebody like this bloke who couldn't march, they didn't have him in the parade. He was kept out of it so that he could go on, well, as you more or less said, he could hang on and go into another squad later on when they would probably try to teach him. As I say, whether they ever did, I don't know.
Your squads, were these, was the whole of a squad that trained together, was this by hut or?
By hut, yes. I can't remember how many would be in a squad, maybe 24 or so who would be in a hut. When I went down this last year to Bovington, I think I only saw about two of these wooden huts left. The rest of them are all brick barracks now. which are very smart places compared to what we had then, and no wooden floors to polish either.
So you were talking about drill. How soon did drill come into your life? From the very beginning, or
pretty well from the beginning, yes.